Okay. So, this talk in my notes is called Armenia 2, which is not a very good name for a talk. It was intended to be quite a bit less formal than the opening talk. And according to the description, it's a mapping of MOOC tools. Usually, you might think a mapping of MOOC tools is, you know, well, I'll look at Coursera, I'll look at edX, but that's not really going to be very informative, or at least I don't think it is. We'll look at them ever so briefly. But what I want to do is map the tools, and this is my goal, map the tools that we use in MOOCs to different aspects of the MOOC. So I'm going to do a mapping of tools, but I'm going to map it along the lines of the process used in a Tractivist MOOC. And I've lost 20% of my audience. No, I'm just kidding. So this is really informal. I probably don't need the microphone or the translator or anything, but that's... There is no translation, so she gets the rest of the afternoon off. If I was in that job, I'd be my bonus. So I want you to feel free to interrupt or comment at any time. As you see, I'm being informal. I'm sitting to get my poor feet a rest. I've done 30 kilometers walking around the city in the last few days, so that's why they're a bit sore. That's where all those pictures came from. Thank you. That's the work that I go through in these presentations. I have the knowledge before I come to the city of technology and learning and all that, but I know nothing about the city. And to me, it's really important to understand the city as well. And I consider that part of the work. I'm not sure anyone else considers that part of the work, but it's a lot of fun, so it doesn't matter. Right. So, In the other session, one of the questions addressed, you know, is there a type of MOOC pedagogy? And we just listened to a bunch of stuff about pedagogy and that. I have really a very simple pedagogy, and it's really too simple for words. And so, of course, I call it the Downs Theory of Education. Although it's not original to me, and it's not really a theory, but I call it that because I want my name to be appear in books and magazines and things. Okay, I'm just kidding. And it's this: to learn is to practice and reflect. To teach is to model and demonstrate. Can you believe I'm getting a phone call? I'm sorry. And the funny thing is, the organizer of the conference.
Hello?
Oh, it's not working. It's got to be Tatiana.
It's me, but I'm not
calling. Oh.
Stop calling you.
Fuck it, darling. Oh, that's funny. For those of you listening in the audience, she said it's her, but she's not calling me. So, okay. You're calling me again. So, I'll just assume that's a wrong number.
I'm not, okay. Can I have
it? I guarantee you. Oops. So now she's on both phones.
If you don't mind, I will answer and see what they say.
Sure. Okay. All right. That's funny. Wonder who it is now. Who else has that number? Maybe it's the CIA. They no one here in Armenia. They wonder why. Okay. So, let me try my educational theory all over again. It's simple, so I can start at the top and not lose too much time. only out to a proper to the site. To teach is to model and demonstrate. To learn is to practice and reflect. Now, if you think about it, that's basically what he said. Right?
I have some friends here that you don't know about.
I have friends here that I don't know about. I've only been in Armenia 3 days and already have friends here. That's so nice. So, and people ask, well, what does that mean in practice? That's a good question. And the method that we employed in the MOOC was something I named after Alan Levine. It's the ARF method, and I name it after Alan Levine. Alan Levine is very fond of dogs, and his internet name is Cog Dog Blog. So ARF is named after Alan Levine, and it stands for Aggregate, Remix, Repurpose, Feed Forward, ARRFF. So, okay, it's not that serious a theory, but the idea here, because it's funny, he's sort of presenting it, you know, from the perspective of how do you teach in formal classrooms and all of that. I take the perspective of how do you learn? Right? What's the actual learning process? When he's talking about, you know, everything from Gagne, I'll forget Gagne, but I agree with him on that, but problem-based or project-based learning, he's looking at the external context in which the learning is taking place. I'm looking at the learner as situated within the learning environment, of what's the sort of thing, in general, they need to do in order to learn. And because I'm a connectivist, I think, okay, well, a person is a node in a network. So you want to aggregate, then you want to remix, repurpose, and then feed forward. You're going to receive signals, process signals, send signals. And if you do that within an authentic environment, you learn. That's the theory. Still needs to be verified empirically, like every theory. Should stand scrutiny. Don't believe it just because I said it. But that's the approach that we've taken. And that's the approach, as I commented earlier, that I see on the internet. That's what people do. So, that's what this talk is about. So, there wasn't an easy way of setting this up. Normally, if I'm doing a talk like this, I would just go onto my computer and I'd show you my tools and things like that. Basically, doing the modeling and demonstrating them, right? Where I show you how I learn in the course of doing my job. And I can't do that because we have a Mac-only environment and Macs don't play nice with others, so I can't connect to my computer, or at least they don't know how. I think in theory it should be possible, but... So, a lot of this you're probably going to know already, but some of it you might not. It's for the bits that you might not. The first part is aggregate. And I use a wide variety of tools and media to aggregate. The most important to me, and I always spell it wrong, and I have no idea why, is YouTube. Don't go to utype.com. It's just a spam site. You have no idea how often I've visited. It's like it's in the favorites on my browser now. I've been there so many times. I don't know why. I always get the I instead of the U. But you might think, well, why? Why would I go to YouTube? And it's for stuff like this. He said Firefox. This is not Firefox. This is Internet Explorer on a Mac. It's the thing I told him I feared most. This is why. Ask me later. Oh, what have I done? Meet your new browser. Never mind.
And now our video's halfway done. Alright. So, this is a thing called a Stirling engine. Now, what's neat about a Stirling engine is that the combustion, in this case a little kerosene lamp, takes place outside the engine. So there's a repository of water or some liquid on the inside, and the heat source is heating it up, and then through the system of pipes and pistons on the inside, it pushes the piston. Now, you can just keep following.
You've been asking about Stirling engines, so I thought I'd build a single-cylinder Stirling engine and take you step-by-step through the construction. At the end, I'll show you some.
Well, it's an engine.
No, it's all.
It's made of a tin can and a can ball.
It's called single-cylinder design. It's just one power cylinder that takes a work engine.
Isn't that brilliant?
Here inside, it gets heated down here. This other cylinder is a solid mass that moves up and down. When it moves down, it displaces the hot air at the bottom, forcing it to move to the top. So the cylinder is called a displacer cylinder, or just a displacer. The displacer moves up and down due to the driving force of this flywheel. As the flywheel turns, it repeatedly lifts and lowers the displacer. In this case, the connection between the flywheel and the displacer is this crankshaft and this thread. Since it is a thread, gravity does some of the lowering too. The other main part is this flexible diaphragm, which in some designs is a piston. In this case, it's just a nut that's connected to the crankshaft using these two connecting rods. It looks like the flywheel is on the diaphragm. It's just the other side. Hot air expands. Even though most of the hot air is at the bottom at this time, the overall volume occupied by the air is increasing. It's not increasing volume there, inflates the diaphragm.
All right, you got the idea. This goes on for another 8 minutes. So I'm going to skip ahead a bit. All right, and I'll skip past the ads. And we'll finish. And now there's more Stirling engines. Here's a solar Stirling engine. So, again, it's the same thing, tin can, moving piston, except the heat this time is solar power. Okay, now you might think, okay, why does this matter at all? The point here is, YouTube is full of stuff like this. Pick a subject, any subject. Candle making, let's pick candle making. I have never looked up candle making in my life, but go to YouTube, there it is. This is, now, to me, this is probably, and I'm lingering on this, this is probably the most important fact about online learning today. Everything you need to know is already online. It really is just a question of finding it, organizing it, and showing it. There are many large, expensive content development projects that are being funded by large companies and big governments, but the stuff you need is already online. It's produced by the community, and it's available in formats that you can use. And there's tons of it, including Coursera. Here's Coursera. We'll see if this works or if Internet Explorer does something weird again. So here's an introduction to philosophy. This is all very structured. What do you know with Professor Duncan Pritchard? Or what should you believe what you hear? I hear a constant single tone. I don't think I'll believe that. Our scientific theories, okay, well, that's very interesting. It looks like a lot of work. On the other hand, on this site, Open Culture, there's so many philosophy courses I can take online. Hubert Dreyfus was one of the first, right? Heidegger's Being and Time, that was one of the first. That's part of what's called iTunes. It was iTunes University. Maybe they've changed. It's free iTunes audio now. A lot of that is. Or a guy called Peter Adamson. I remember when he started, because I put a link to it in my newsletter. Wait, it was years ago now, where he started with tallies, and then Anaximander and Anaximenes, and he's gone on. These are, I think they're like an hour long, each one of these, audio lecture. They're quite good. They're very informative. You could listen to them, one saying each night for the rest of eternity. Well, for about half a year at the moment. He's up to Iran. Iran during the caliphates. And he's continuing. Eventually this will be a series of audio lectures covering all of the history of philosophy. He's just doing it. He's not being paid to do it. Look, he is a philosopher. But he's just making this content and putting it online. Oops. Silly Internet Explorer. Go away. Whoops, that's too far away. So there's edX, which is another one of these MOOC sites. So here's edX. Alien Worlds, the Science of Exoplanet Discovery and Characterization. Very formal course, very informative, really interesting. It's very interesting how they discover exoplanets. But my preferred site for space and related things is, believe it or not, NASA. Go to the source. And I subscribe to the Image of the Day gallery. So I followed all the developments about Pluto with interest. I know right now that they're about to land a spacecraft on a comet. That's so cool. I've been following this, again, for years. NASA can be very participatory. You might know that there's a lunar rover. It's a self-driving car on the surface of Mars. There are two of them that landed, Spirit and Opportunity. And one of the things NASA did is they had you fill in a form. Fill in a form, we'll put your name on a CD, and we'll put the CD on one of the lunar rovers. So my name, or not lunar rovers, Mars rovers, I should say. My name is on a CD on a little cart driving around in Mars, on Mars. How cool was that? And you might think, well, that's pretty silly, but you know, I've been following Opportunity really closely, looking at all the pictures it takes back from the surface of Mars. And I was secretly happy when Spirit stopped working, but Opportunity continued. Because those Spirit people think they're so great. I'm just kidding. But, you know, it gave me a personal connection to space exploration on Mars. That's much better than an edX course. In my mind. Close all tabs. Always close all tabs. Wow. Alright. So, that's the obvious, right? And I can spend the rest of my life pointing to sites on the internet that have lots of really cool stuff, useful stuff, where you can learn simple things like how to make a Stirling engine to really complex, deep things like philosophy. That's why I always puzzle when people say, well, young people don't have the capacity, can't learn all of this stuff, etc. They have all of this now at their fingertips. They do not have a finding. Yes, it's true. They're young people. They're not adults. They do not have adult information processing capacity. No one would expect that. But if you want to ask somebody, how do you make a Stirling engine? Do you ask a young person or an old person? Unless the old person is a mechanic, they're not going to know. The young person won't know, and they won't know the theory, but they'll come back to you with the answer in a couple of minutes. And that's the difference. And I think it's a really significant difference. Another way of aggregating is to create content from the world. I think that's an equally valid and important kind of aggregation. So, like photography, for example, and of course, you can learn all about photography on the internet. This is the Nikon School of Photography. Has classes, has lessons. there are dozens and dozens of sites where you can learn photography online, or you can just teach yourself. One of the slides in my presentation earlier on this morning, I don't know if you noticed, it was the slide, like, I forget what it's called, but you know that whole set of staircases that go up?
Cascade.
What is it in Armenian? Sorry?
It's the same.
It's also the same in Armenian. Okay, I figured. So, if you go back to my slides and look at that picture, at the very bottom of the picture is a little girl holding a digital SLR camera. And what she had done, I noticed this just as I was watching. You know how you go down a whole bunch of steps, you can get right up to the face of it. That's what she went down all of the steps. She was down there for a while taking photographs. And then I caught a picture of her as she's just coming out of there with her camera. She's out there making photographs, really good, high-quality photographs with a DSLR camera. That would have been unheard of when I was a kid. Audacity is a staple of mine. This right here that I'm using to record this talk is Audacity. It's audio recording software. I do recommend you use a microphone. I forgot my microphone in my room this morning, so the quality of sound won't be perfect, but it'll be perfectly acceptable. It's one of these things, right? To teach is to model and demonstrate. I record all of my talks. I share these recordings. Even the informal talks like this one where I'll make lots of mistakes, I share these. And I record them and share them so that people can learn from them. I don't know what they'll learn. And it doesn't matter what they'll learn. Different people will learn different things. Maybe, you know, someone will, in 5 years or 100 years, we'll study the brilliant oratorial style of those. Or maybe it'll show up in lots of how not to conduct an informal session. Either way is good with me. Audacity is free open source software. That's what's wonderful about it too. So anybody with a computer or a laptop can record audio. Of course, Audacity is not the only audio recording software out there. SoundCloud and many others. This is just the one that I use. I don't know what's beeping. It must be Internet Explorer. Or maybe not. Oh, it's the phone again. Yeah, it's the phone's ringing again. My friends in Armenia. So, something that I wanted to do, I thought about doing today, but I don't think I had the bandwidth, is Google Hangout on Air. Again, this is capturing content in place. It's Google, so Microsoft Outlook won't open it. There we go. Jeez, I was just kidding. All right. So, this link here points to a live streaming guide. It's really simple. If you create an account in YouTube, then there's a button that says start a Hangout on Air. You click the button, and it starts recording with your video camera and your microphone. And you are instantly broadcasting a live stream video. And it's also archiving that video so people can see it later. Brilliant. I just love it. The only thing is it needs YouTube-sized bandwidth. Like, I could have done it during my talk and it would have worked, but all the people in the audience who were reading their email, it would have slowed down their email, and I did not want to do that, so I didn't do it. So you sort of have to be careful. But here's the sort of thing I do with it. Whoops. So, this is something I did just the other day. is I had an online conversation with Skype. Oh, it's not there. Oh, well. Oh, this must be in here. Rex. And I can't. At Skype, we love feedback. No, thanks. Go away. The internet can be really annoying sometimes, too. Did I mention that? There it is. So, this is me doing an interview recorded in Skype, broadcast on YouTube. Why not? You have to mess around a bit to make it work. But I'll leave that as an exercise for those of you who are dedicated, mostly because it would take too long to explain. But it's a really straightforward sort of thing. If you're not sure how to do this, ask your kids. Because even though they can't really learn on the internet, they probably know how to do this. Right? Another tool that I absolutely depend on, these are really simple tools, aren't they? Is called the Windows Snipping Tool. If you have Windows, you have this tool. So it looks like this. You can't really see that, can you? But what I can do is I'll select new, and now I'll capture an area. And you can't see me capturing it, but you'll see the result. So here I've just captured a piece of my screen, and now that's an image. I can save that image or do whatever I want with it. I'll just delete it because I don't want this image. But the point here is any web page, any image, anything like that, I can capture very easily with my snipping tool. Video downloader, which I meant or clicked on earlier by accident, I can download any video from YouTube or any of these other video sites. So there's all kinds of ways for me to create or gather content. But that's not all. My number one tool for personal learning are the feed readers. And I use a feed reader called Feedly. And we're probably not going to see much here. Let's just search. Let's search for me. I always do that. Whenever I hit a new site, it gives me an option of searching. I search for myself. Not because I'm egotistical, but because I know what to expect. More or less. And, okay, that's not so good. So my results are Jot Down Cultural Magazine, Shut Up and Sit Down, www.downtoearth, The Naked Scientist Podcast. Yeah. Feedly works better if you have a personal account. So here's the same site, and I have it bookmarked. Here's the same site on my screen. Generally, there's content. It's transferring data. Transferring. Well, let's let it transfer data for a bit. The idea of Feedly is I subscribe to a large number of blogs, podcasts, newsletters, newspapers, discussion lists, etc. And all of these sites have what are called RSS feeds. You can recognize an RSS feed by the characteristic logo. You see it here in the orange. These logos used to be in the address bar of bloggers, but they've taken them out. But you can still see them on pages a lot. And if you click on the RSS feed, well, a real RSS feed, not this image, what you get is a machine-readable version of the page. So It's Internet Explorer, so it's not going to give it to me nicely and neatly. But here's what it looks like when I subscribe to that page. So on the left-hand side are all of my sources. I actually subscribe to something like, I don't know, about 1,200 different sources. On the right-hand side are things that people wrote today.
All right.
This isn't going to display very well, but imagine seeing all the sources here and all the posts there. You'll have to go to feedly.com to try it for yourself. But the idea here is, it's my morning routine. So I go to my Feedly sites, and I read the stuff that people have written in the last 24 hours about whatever I'm interested in. I have different interests. If you had different interests, you'd follow different feeds. I'm able to keep up with thousands of people using this one site. So that's content aggregation. There's another one, if you don't like Feedly, it's called The Old Reader, which is a terrible name. It's a lot like Feedly. There it is. I don't like the design, because I don't like green and orange as a design scheme. That's just me. And even Outlook, you can subscribe to RRS feeds in your email using Outlook. I'm not sure about other email readers, but I believe that for most of them, there are plugins that will allow you to have RRS feeds in your email. I get enough email as it is, so I keep my RRS feeds separate. The other major sources for me are mailing lists and discussion lists. Google Groups, everyone knows, of course. Before Google Groups, there were Yahoo Groups. Now, again, this is a completely random selection because I'm using somebody else's computer. So what have we got? Vectorians. We are a group of Illuminate students who have been a part of the Embedded System VLSI Training or Freshers Industry Organization Program at Vector. It's Vectorians. Okay. Cute. North Somerset Free Cycle Brandon, IBM Pension. As you can see, there is literally a group for everything you can think of. Pick something at random. Eagles. That is really genuinely random. It's the first word that popped into my mind. So here's a group called Eagles, Eagle View, Eagle Talk, Tentec Eagle, Eagles Fly, Eagles Announcement, and so on and on and on. Now, not everything is about the birds, but a lot of them are. Eagles Come Back. Oh, that's football. Anyhow. So that's aggregating. That's before we've done any actual learning. All of this content, all of these sources of information are available to us using these different tools. When I'm teaching a MOOC, one of the first things I say to participants in the MOOC is, use these things. And we give them a list of suggestions. They can use other things. And I say, find, beg, borrow, steal, whatever. Well, maybe not steal, but any content that you find that is relevant to our topic of discussion. This does two things. First of all, it means I don't have to create content. As a professor, I'm very lazy, and I don't want to create content. And why should I? There's already 100 sources of the same content online, all over the place. I've just shown that. Second, it gives me a wide selection of content from many different points of view. And when this content is shared with everybody else in the course, which is what we do, then everybody in the course has this whole wide selection of things to look at. In our MOOCs, the first complaint And we got complaints. The first complaint was, there's too much content. But that's the first lesson in a MOOC, is to select the content you think will be most interesting. It's kind of an exercise, right? You'll find content that appeals to you. It's in the language you speak, it's written to you, it's in the format that you like. Maybe you like video, there's video. If you like text, there's text. If you like animations, whatever. And it's content that's created specifically for the course by people in the course, or it's content that was created for some other reason that's just wrong. The next bit is remix. Remix is really nothing more than bricolage. Bringing together things from different sources, putting them together. There's no real rule for this. The only rule is, if you think it fits, put it together. I'm just going to jump to a link here. That's not it. But yeah, I knew you were going to say. This is the problem, right? It won't just tell me, no, that's a bad link. It offers to show me some stuff in Bing. Because when I type the wrong link, what I really wanted to be doing was searching. That was more sarcasm. Okay. So, here's an example of remix. And I'm just remixing my own stuff, but still. This is a presentation page. It's not as good as some of the others, but it'll do. And I have the description, but I have embedded in it the slides, and I have embedded in it the audio recording. Oh, right, they turned down the audio, so you don't get to have a talk within a talk. One day I'm going to do one of these where I demonstrate the audio recording, and it will be a recording of me demonstrating the audio recording, and I'll do a talk within a talk within a talk. So, but you see the concept, right? It's a very simple thing. Oh, that's more of the same. I'm looking for one with the video. Where's London? This one, I think. No. I can't read my own writing. It's too far away. No, it's just. I have video embedded in some of them as well. But the idea here is, and this was the original genius of HTML, and it really was genius. It was brilliant. We looked at the encoding, and again, many of you probably know this. Just show me the source. Where does it say new source? Oh, there. Okay. Thank you. You can see that HTML really is a remix language. People think of it as a language for creating text and web pages, but it's a remix language. It lets me bring together style sheets and JavaScript and links to other resources, more style sheets, and objects. Here's an object. This is that. This is the audio recording here, and up here somewhere, it's hard for me to read, is the slideshow, etc. So, the HTML web page is the first and primary example of remix, bringing things together. And that's why this is the first link on this page, how to write HTML. And you might think, well, those of you who already know it probably think, who needs a school to learn how to write HTML? But those of you who don't know it, You can take my word. It's really simple to do, and it's the easiest way to do remakes in the world, almost. But there's not just that. Well, here's the embed codes. This talks a little bit how to use embed codes to put videos inside a web page. My remix tool of choice, I don't even have a link, is PowerPoint. And I know people talking about death by PowerPoint and all of that. I love PowerPoint. And maybe I shouldn't, but I really do. I freely confess that, even though the audio is still running. Because PowerPoint lets me remix things, and it doesn't judge much. So I can snip a photograph and put it in my slides. I can take some audio and put it in my slides. I can put a little bit of video in. I can do slide transitions. I can bring bits and pieces from all over the place. And that's what I do. When I create my talks, the main thing I'm doing as the first part of the creative process after I've aggregated is I'm using PowerPoint as my remix tool. And it's a powerful way of shaping and helping me learn. You don't have to use PowerPoint. Google has their own version. It's called One Account, All of Google. Normally, it just comes up with the Google presenting tool, but again, it's somebody else's computer. Zoho, if you don't want to use Google because you don't want all of your content indexed and sold to advertisers, Zoho does everything that Google does, and it does it just as well. In fact, it does many more things. It has a bunch of business applications as well as Notebook, Show, which is their PowerPoint version, Docs, Chat, Connect, Meeting, etc. Zoho is, again, a really good remix tool. And I know that the other presentation that you're not watching was done in Prezi. A lot of people like Prezi. Again, the function of Prezi, for me, predominantly is as a remix tool as opposed to a presentation tool. There's other kinds of remix. I think a popular one, not so much with academics and researchers or even students, is the playlist as remix. And what a playlist is simply a collection of audio or video recordings organized in a list. It's pretty basic remix, obviously, but it's interesting and it's useful. The old way of doing that was with something called Delicious. This is really old school. It's almost 10 years old now. And it wants me to sign in or up or whatever, so I can't really look at it. But what Delicious is an application that lets you create bookmarks on the web. Now you might think, well, that's not very useful, except it is useful because it means you have bookmarks on the web. So they're always accessible to you. The other thing about Delicious is, when you create a bookmark, you create what's known as a tag for that bookmark, or a hashtag, it's sometimes called. If you're not familiar with hashtags, you should look them up. Hashtags are the glue of Remix. They're the glue of Remix because what happens is all the people out there who use this type of system, they'll use hashtags. And the key with a hashtag is you use the hash symbol and then any string of characters you want. So if you're writing about, say, downs, you just happen to be doing that, you use hashtag, you know, hash downs. If you're writing about cats, hash cats, right? Now, Delicious allows you to search for these links across all of its users according to hashtags. This creates what is known as a folksonomy. A folksonomy is like a taxonomy, except it's not created by data scientists. It's created by, if you will, common folk. It's an American term. So, you never know what you're going to get when you search in a hashtag. Because remember I said earlier during my talk, when I use the word cat, I mean something different from when you use the word cat. Everybody uses the same word slightly differently. So if I search for hashtag cat, I'm going to get this wide range of unexpected results. You can do that in Twitter too. I'll come back to Twitter in a bit. That's the thing with tags is the concept has spread. It began with a site called TechNarratty. I don't think TechNarratty even exists anymore. They were really popular for a while. They were the number one blog indexing site in the world for a few years. And I don't think they even load anymore. They tried to go commercial. And they did it very badly. They tried to monetize what they called TechNarratty tags. And it didn't work. The concept of the tag lived on. The concept of the TechNarratty tag did not. And it obviously is not at all anymore. How sad. Here is some real magic for Remix. If you're not familiar with this site and you like the idea of Remix, go explore, but don't do it unless you have several days free. It's telling me to use a real browser and not Internet Explorer. Oh, yeah, that's funny. And they're so right to say that. Let's try. I don't know. Oh, there's Firefox. I'm going to use Firefox. Yes, if you have Internet Explorer on your computer, you probably can't delete it. But remove the icon and load a real browser like Firefox. All right, so we can't really learn more here. This is actually worth taking the time to log in for. Otherwise, I would never do it. So, those of you in IFTTT, take note. Notice that 14 character password. And it's wrong. Okay, that's good. Don't. Well, I don't know. I hate passwords. It kills me. It's an Apple machine. So it won't connect to most every computer in the world, but it has Internet Explorer. Go figure. All right, let's see if this comes up on my... Yeah, the bandwidth is slow. They must be reading a lot of email in the other session. And just kidding. And we're waiting. We're transferring data, but we're still waiting. Anyhow, here's the idea of IFTTT. It stands for if this, then that. And what they've done is they've taken a whole bunch of internet services like RSS, like email, like Delicious. They would have taken Technorati if it still existed, but it doesn't. Oh, I'm not signed in here either. Oh, jeez. Never mind then. You should go check it out. Anyhow, what it does is, if an event happens on one of your channels, it will create an event on another channel. So here's what I do. And this actually kind of falls into the heading of feed forward, which is later on in the talk. But I'll mention it now because we might not get to that. So I write a blog post. IFTTT catches my blog post, sends it to app.net, which is a service I use. And it sends it to app.net. That produces a post on app.net. App.net, I have another IFTTT that says, if something happens on app.net, take that content and put it on Twitter. So it goes on to Twitter. I have another one that says, if something has happened on Twitter, put it on Facebook. And so that happens. So anytime I write a post on my blog, it goes from here to here to here to here, all automatically. So that's one way of using it. There's dozens and dozens of ways of using it. They're called recipes, and the idea is that you can take content that appears in one place and make it appear in other places. So you can use that not just to share your own content, but you can also use it to create specialized content feeds for yourself. One of the things that I do, for example, with IFTTT is I use Twitter. I set up a hashtag search in Twitter, and I output it to RSS. And then I take that RSS feed, and I subscribe to it in Feedly. So one of my RSS feeds is all the stuff in Twitter on a certain topic. So people look at my Twitter account, and they complain, you don't subscribe to anybody in Twitter. Well, no, I don't. But I've got these feeds working for me, mining Twitter for all content that I'm interested in. I don't need to subscribe to people in Twitter, because IFTTT searches for hashtag content in Twitter. One of those, by the way, is hashtag downs. So if you mention me on Twitter, I'll find it. Next is repurpose. Repurpose is the fun bit. It's funny because so many, I don't know, talks, stories, articles begin with this step. They begin with something like, write something and share it on the internet. That's really bad advice. It's not how you learn, right? It's the third step. First you've aggregated, then you've remixed. You have something to look at, and you have enough perspectives to begin to develop a point of view. Then you begin to write. Now, you never begin blogging, you never begin creating simply with a blank sheet of paper and no thoughts in your mind. You bring the content in and remix it, and then you begin to create. And that might sound really trite, but if you examine, for example, the logic of scientific discovery, that's how it works. Where they are bringing things in from other fields and drawing unique and unexpected connections between these things, and then they rework these ideas into something new and they make discoveries. These are some really simple tools. There's no end of tools for creating or repurposing the stuff that you've aggregated and remixed. The simple one is Blogger. I use Blogger all the time. even though I have my own whole website with my own content management system that I built myself, I still use Blogger because it's easy. If you don't like Blogger, because it's Google, there's WordPress. Excuse me, I get a speech.
Chew.
Bless you.
Thank you. This is not the first sneeze of mine recorded on audio, sadly. I've had numerous sneezes, coughs, etc. Probably the only person who's recorded more is George Burns. Okay. So, WordPress, there's the hard way and the easy way. The hard way is to download the software from WordPress.org, install it on your own web server, and run it. That's the better way, but it takes some time to do. It's totally worth doing unless you have a life. The easy way is to go to WordPress.com. It's a commercial service, and just create a blog with that. But it is very easy. It's as easy as Blogger. I should probably use it, but Blogger came out first. It's hard for me to change. Or if you want to be like the young set, use Tumblr. Tumblr is more for images, graphics, animated GIFs, things like that. Less text-focused and more visually focused, but very, very popular. But there's more than just creating text, and indeed, you may recall, but I commented that people speak to each other today, not just in text, but in a wide range of different kinds of media. One of the most popular of those is called the lolcat. The lolcat is a picture of a cat, usually, with some interesting text, like my cat has cheeseburger. That's why I had a picture of a cat on my presentation. We all saw the cat. That's the neat thing about lolcats is you take a cat picture and some text, and it's all very funny, but it's also kind of cynical and insightful at the same time. But it's in a language that only young people get, because old people, well, actually, they can get it. You have to read a few thousand of these first to understand what they're all about, just like the kids did. So, the generic term for those is, quote, photos. I don't like that term. I make my own, quote, photos in Photoshop, but if you don't have Photoshop, there's all kinds of things you can do. Pin words, what's that called? Findings, Pinstamatic. A lot of these have the word pin in them because what people do is they create these, quote, photos, and then they put them on a website called Pinterest, which is like a blog for photos. And it wouldn't be a talk for me without some lolcats. So let's look at a few. So yeah, and the first one's a dog. That figures. Well, that's kind of funny. All right, and he's going to do it again because he's a dog, right? You get it? He's a dog. He's just going to do it over and over, mindlessly sliding it. Okay, jack-o'-lantern brains. Okay, you get the idea here what's happening, right? It's a picture, well, it's a rat or something. I don't know. Squirrel. It's a squirrel eating a nut out of a jack-o'-lantern. Okay, which is pretty funny in itself, but then jack-o'-lantern brains, it refers to the whole culture of zombies, right? This is the idea of lolcats. They're very contextual. Too much advertising on this site now. Timo the cat loves his cuddle time, and so do we. That's a video. Yeah, skip the video. Someone forgot to replace the roll. Can you believe it? There's no toilet paper in the litter box again. It's funny because cats don't use toilet paper. Right. add some ones to your exclamation points. It's funnier that way. Yeah. Always trust internet advice from the cat. That's funny because my cat very frequently walks on my keyboard and sends instant messages for me. It could be worse. Back in the pre-internet days, I had a fax machine, and my cat would walk on the fax machine and send long-distance fax messages of blank pages. All right, so that's enough lolcats for today. I'm running out of time, aren't I?
Yeah.
How much time do I have?
2 minutes.
I have 2 minutes.
Or five.
we're almost done. Feed forward. I could have lingered for the rest of the day on repurpose. The idea of repurpose is to take things that other people have created and make them your own in any way, shape, or form that you feel is necessary. And very often that means giving it a specific cultural or context-specific association. You're reflecting not just yourself, but your environment, the values, the language, the in-jokes, the jargon, and all of that. And then you're sharing it with the rest of the world. It didn't really come out in my talk so much this morning, but a big part of the Beyond Borders aspect of the connectivist style of course is you bring other people's content in, you make it your own, reflecting your own context, and then you share it back out again with the rest of the world. It's a very powerful device for linking cultures and peoples together. So, feeding forward. Flickr is where I feed forward or share all of my photos. I have, I don't know how many, 30,000 or so photos on Flickr. And what's interesting here, you remember the guy doing his philosophy talks, and he just does these talks and shares them, or the open content webpage. My photos, which I put online on Flickr, I share openly. And what that means is I license them using Creative Commons so that anybody else can take my photo and do whatever they want with it. Except sell it. You can't sell it. Because if you sell it, that breaks the sharing loop, right? You've put a barrier in place. I don't want barriers. So you can take any of the photos that I shared this morning. They'll all be on my Flickr account. You can put silly little slogans on them about cats and share them on Pinterest, and that would be okay. I don't know why you would do that, but you could. Here's a site called DeviantArt. If you are of any artistic inclination at all, I highly recommend this site. It's brilliant. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to go into it in too much detail because it's a bit R-rated sometimes, but it's brilliant. It's art of all shapes and forms that you can imagine. People share. They share tens, hundreds of thousands, millions of images on these sites. Videos, you already know, you can share on YouTube. Social networks, I talked about briefly earlier. I don't know why I did that. So, the major ones that I use, Twitter. The neat thing about Twitter is tags, of course. Oh, we're probably not signed into Twitter either, are we? So, let's see. No, and it won't let us use it until we sign in. The web is becoming evil that way. All these sites that won't let us use them unless we sign in is barriers, breaking the flow of communication. I think it's wrong. You're not the first person to hear that from me. Facebook as well. You can share not just on your own site, but also on group pages or pages. LinkedIn is very popular. If you're looking at a professional career of any sort, you should have a LinkedIn page. Pinterest, which I mentioned, is a place where people share photos or photos with cat stories on them. And that's it. A quick mapping and survey of the tools that I at least use when creating connectedness courses and indeed in my own learning and development online. Thank you for being here. And I finished within my allotted 2 minutes.